We are at the bottom of Kuf Nun Amud Beis, 150b, right at the end there. We're talking about a statement that was said by Abba Shaul at the end of the Mishnah. Abba Shaul had said a general rule. Abba Shaul said that anything I'm allowed to say, then I'm allowed to also be machshech alav, meaning anything I'm allowed to say is also something I'm allowed to sit at the end of Shabbos and wait to do after Shabbos. Basically meaning like if the activity, the way that I speak it is okay, so then it also should be okay to do that at the end of Shabbos. So the Gemara says here, well, which clause of the Mishnah was he saying that about? Ibai Elu, Abasho Ahai, Al Ezed Din, Ile Ma'areshakai, if it's on the first part, so then Ein Machshich Na'atchum Liskor Paulim Lahavi Peros, if it's on the part where you can't wait to hire workers. So hi kol shani zak ben rasa rasha ani bechashicha. So it shouldn't have said anything I'm allowed to say that I'm allowed to do at the end of Shabbos. Kol sheani zak ben miraso ani rasha bechashicha. It should say anything that I'm not allowed to say, because the whole point of the first part of the Mishnah was what you're not allowed to do. So that should also be the phrasing at the end of the Mishnah where he says his rule. Ela asefakai. It must be saying that his rule, his general phrasing, is going on the end of the Mishnah. That it's going about avamach shechulishmor mevi peres biyado. He's allowed to do something, meaning proactively. What are you allowed to do? So then that's what he says. He responds, this is something you're allowed to do. Anything you're allowed to say is what you're allowed to do. So the Gemara says, wait a second. Hi kol she'eni zak b'chashicha, so rashi ani ma'avirasim b'alei. It should say anything that I'm allowed to do, I'm allowed to say. But he said anything I'm allowed to say, I'm allowed to do. So why did he change the order? So the Gemara says, no. La'olam ha'seifakai, we're going to stick to our guns. We're going to say he's talking about the end of the Mishnah. V'abasho ahakai, he's talking about a different phrase in the Mishnah, or not in this Mishnah, but in a different Mishnah. The Amar of Yehuda Amar Shmuel, mutzul adam lomar lachaveiro, shmur li peros shebetchumcha, v'ani yeshmur lacha peros shebetchumi. You're allowed to say to your friend, can you guard fruit that are in your tchum? And I will guard your fruit that are in my tchum. Okay, v'kamar Abba Shaul l'tanakama, and Abba Shaul is asking l'tanakama, mila modes demutra adam lomar l'chaveir shmur li peros shebetchumcha v'aniyah shmur l'cha peros shebetchumi. Did we not say that this is the possibility that you're allowed to do such a thing? Meaning, why is the Tanakhama limiting himself in his in the extent that he's using the heter? So the Gemara says, Ema, therefore, says Abba Shaul, he's coming to include something else. Not only what the Tanakhama says, but also this phrasing, which we just said about the fruit in the friend's field, that kol she'ani zak ben rasa rasha ani machshich alav, basically intuiting or implying that there are other things included in this heter that you could say, similar to the case we just brought, and therefore he's responding to the Tanakhama in a way which is overarching beyond just what the Tanakhama's examples included. Okay, so the Gemara says, wait a second, klala suyimai, so what does it include? What's sort of the threshold or the extreme, the most extreme example of something which the general rule includes? Lasui had the Tanur Rabbanan to explain or to include the following: Ein machshichen al tzchum lahavi behema. You're not allowed to wait at the end of Shabbos to bring in an animal, which is outside the tzchum. But haisa behemto, haisa omedes chutz tzchum. If it's standing outside of the tzchum, but close by, korolav hiba. So you can actually speak to it, and then it can come. So klal amar Abba Shaul. Then Abba Shaul comes along and says, kol shani zakev amirasa jarin shani hashchalav u'machshich l'mapeach aliskei akala. We saw this before, and he says you're allowed to do things for the sake of a wedding, ve'aliskei hames, and for the sake of a dead body, lahavi lo aron ratachrichin, to bring him a coffin and the burial shrouds for omrim lo. And to say to a person, Lech l'makom ploni, to go to this place, v'yimladon lah says, makom ploni, u'baha makom, havei m'makom ploni, l'mas z'mana havei b'masayim. He says, you can talk about all these things. You say, go over there to go find it, go over there to go find it, get it for $100, get it for $200. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Huda, Omer, u'bavash lo yizker sikum ha'makach, that the Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Huda says, all that's fine, as long as you're not mentioning money. Once you say an actual piece of money, an actual amount of money, that gets into things that you can't do on Shabbos, and therefore you're not allowed to say that. Interesting why Abishol would allow it if he's not allowed to talk about it. Maybe because it's a mitzvah, he'd be allowed to talk about it on Shabbos too, and therefore it's okay to talk about it for after Shabbos also, but unclear. Okay, new Mishnah. As we just said, quoting from this Mishnah, you're allowed to do things for a wedding, allowed to do things for a dead body after at the end of Shabbos for the sake of doing things after Shabbos. A Jew is not allowed to use a flute. You're not allowed to use a flute. Let me just check in a second. A flute. Now let's use a flute. I had a friend in Kansas who was a flautist, which means someone who plays the flute. And there's apparently a big difference between a flute and a piccolo. So I don't want to mess those up. He was like in an orchestra and everything. He always was very mockbid. That there's a difference. Okay, either way. So this is talking about a flute. I don't know if they had a piccolo back then. Either way. So if a non-Jew brings it in on Shabbos, so you're not allowed to use it on Shabbos. You're not allowed to use it even after Shabbos, unless you know for sure that it came from a nearby place. This is actually important. I got a shayla last week about what do you do if you know, like Amazon Prime. What if you know a non-Jew is bringing you something on Amazon Prime from outside the tchum? Are you allowed to take it? Are you allowed to use it after Shabbos? Because of this, we've seen it before, but because of this Mishnah, that you're not allowed to use something right after Shabbos, which was brought to you on Shabbos, if it was brought to you from outside of the Tchum, meaning there was something done for you, which was Usser. So this is something, even if it's a non-Jew, so this is something we're talking about here. So if a non-Jew brings a flute from outside of the Tchum on Shabbos, so then you're not allowed to use it right after Shabbos. So the Gemara says, I mean, you can't use it for the eulogy. They would play these flutes for the eulogies. Okay. So the Gemara says, the only time that you're allowed to is if it's from Yimakum Karov. You know it came from inside the city, and therefore if there was no Isser done, Isser Torah, no Isser Doraisa done to it when it was brought in. Asul Aron v'chavrulo kever yikaver bo Yisrael. If a non-Jew had already made a coffin and made a burial plot for a non-Jew, you're allowed to bury a Jew in it. If, however, even bishvil Yisrael lo yikaver bo alamis, if it was specifically created for a Jew on Shabbos, so then you're not allowed to use it ever because it was specifically done for the Jew. And we've talked about that before. So the Gemara says, "Ma mimakom karov." What does it mean? It has to come from a close place. Rav amar mimakom karov mamash. It has to mamash come from a few blocks away. It can't come from outside the tchum. Ushmul amar chayshinan shemachotz lechom olanu. It's not that we have to know for sure, but we have to have just a suspicion that maybe it came from outside. As long as it's not absolutely coming from outside, then it's okay. Which, by the way, also factors in partly to the Amazon shayla, because the Amazon shayla is where do they bring it from? Sometimes there's an Amazon, you know, location which is inside of the tchum technically, and therefore it's not as big of a problem. You know, on this road trip, and on all roads, and anyone who's driving on the highway now, you see all these Amazon Prime trucks every few minutes. There's another Amazon Prime truck. The back of it says there's a lot more to Prime, a truckload more. So yes, they're doing a lot of cross country traveling, but you don't know necessarily where the stuff is coming from. If it's from inside the tchum, you'd be okay. Inside the tchum, you'd be okay. So the Gemara says,
Rabbi, would that apply if you get a?
Yeah.
Would that apply if you get a morning newspaper?
So there's a big question about that. Yeah, a lot of people ask that question about whether or not something which comes from outside the tchum, like a newspaper, would be a problem. Most newspapers nowadays are published somewhere in the city. But you'd be right. There is a potential issue with that for sure. There are also other issues with newspapers. We talked about yesterday or a couple days ago in terms of the menus and reading things that are Shabbistic versus unShabbistic. There's also a problem of possible mukta. Is it nolad? Was it created on Shabbos and therefore it's something brand new that wasn't prepared for from before Shabbos? All these are questions and talked about. There are some leniencies, but generally there are a lot of issues with it. It's kind of like brushing your teeth on Shabbos. Like there are there are leniencies for each aspect of it, but putting them all together is probably something that best to be avoided. But if you're in a habit of it, you know, you don't necessarily have to change it. But either way, so the Gemara says, Daika masnisin kivasi de Shmuel. It sounds like Shmuel in our mission, the Ketani Asalo Aram Vechafer Lo Kever, you cover by Yisrael, that the non-Jew makes a kever, makes a coffin, that the only problem is if you know for sure it was made for a Jew, that's a problem. But if it just, the non-Jew just made it, who knows who it's for, so then it would be okay for the Jew to use it. Alma misveka shari, hachana misveka shari. So Gemara says then, so this is therefore sounds like Shmuel, that even if it's only a suffix, we don't know where it came from, so that's okay. V'tanek v'asad Rav, we also have a brisa that's like Rav. Ir she Yisrael v'nachum darim ba, v'esaba merchatz b'Shabbos, and you have a bathhouse that operates on Shabbos. Im rov nachum la'erev rochet b'miyad, im rov Yisrael yam tinash k'desh yachmu hachamin, Bresa says that if you have water that was heated up for a bathhouse on Shabbos, if that bathhouse is operated for the sake of non-Jews, so then it's for sure okay for Jews. If it's operated for the sake of Jews, so it's for sure not okay for Jews. You have to wait for it to be heated up again, or at least the amount of time that it would need to be heated up. If it's half and half, so then you have to be machmir. So that sounds like Rav, that it's not just a suffix, but if you know for sure, that you have to know for sure it was for a non-Jew. You can't just be make a lenient for the suffix, like the 50-50 case. So Gemara says, Rabbi Yehuda Omer ba'ambati ketani yesh barishus rochitz ba'miyad. Im yesh barishus rochitz ba'miyad. If there's something called rishus, we'll see in a second what that means. Some kind of governing power. So then you're allowed to wash right away from that water if it's a small bath. So my rishus, I'm Rav Yehuda, I'm a Rav Yitzchak, braid Rav Yehuda, im yesh ba'adam chashuv sheyesh lo asar avadim, shemachamin lo kumkumin ba'achzachas ma'abati ketane mutzu lichos b'miyad. If you've got a bunch of people that are working for you and they could heat the water up really fast in a technical way, in a kumkum, right, in a bunch of different kumkums, and you fill up the bath right away, it takes very, very little time, so then you don't have to wait because technically that is your waiting period and it's not a problem to do so. Okay, asul aram chafer lo kever amai hacha nam yamtim b'chdei shiasu. Why are we saying that you're allowed to use the coffin and the burial spot right away? Presumably, you should wait until they're able to be made in that amount of time. So amar ula ba'omid ba'asratya. It's sitting in the middle of the road, and therefore it's sort of open to anybody. Tenach kever aron ma'ikul meimar. That's okay if it's a burial spot. What about a coffin? A coffin you actually have to make, and therefore it should be something which is possibly for a Jew. And how do you know it's not for a Jew? What's giving it away? So, it's sitting on that grave. It's sitting on the same place. Clearly, it wasn't for the Jew. It was for the non-Jew because Jews are not buried in the middle of the street. And that's why we know it was for the non-Jew. It's living, according to Rav, it's sort of an obvious indicator that it's not for the Jew. Okay. Mishnah. An unfortunate Mishnah. Yerachmiel here today? No. Osin kol tzarach ha'emes. You can do anything you need to for a dead body on Shabbos. Sachin u'madich no'sol b'vashlo yaziz bo'ever. You're allowed to smear oil on it and anoint it as long as you don't move any of the body parts. Shomtin es hakar. If you take away the pillow, mitachtav, u'matil no'sol alachol, you can, and you can move him, I believe. This means not explicitly. You're allowed to move him onto the sand. Remove a pillow from under him and place it on cold sand. Bishvil sheyamtin. Sheyamtin means so that on the next daf, so that it does not decompose as quickly. So the Gemara says, "Koshrenes halechi lo sheyale ela shelo Yosef." You can tie up around the head. You can tie the jaw so it stays in place. Not you can't bring it back up, but you can keep it in place so it doesn't fall more. People are familiar with this phenomenon, so then you might know what it's talking about. V'chein koshrenish rasom chnosa besafsal o baruchos hamita lo shetale ela shetos lo shelo tosef. Similarly, with the building, we've actually seen this brisa before, or this mishnah before. If there's a beam that's falling down on your house, You're not allowed to push it back up, but you're allowed to put something under it so it doesn't fall anymore. You can maintain where it is, but you can't move from where it is. The Gemara now says, he wanted to smooth the ground. He says to him, he followed Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel followed Rabbi Meir and asked him, can I smoothen the ground over there? He says, no, you're not allowed to. You can't do that. Amar lo, ein sachin karka bekarka. Hold on. I skipped. Lezemechus bikesh la'adiach karka. Amar lo, ein madichin. Lasuch karka. Amar lo, ein sachin. Karka bekarka mechalfa. Meis bekarka lo mechlaf. The reason is because even if it's an okay piece of ground like tile or something like that in a bathroom, you wouldn't be allowed to smear or smoothen, even though technically it would be okay, because you're going to get confused with another piece of ground. The exception to that is a dead body. A dead body you're allowed to anoint with oil, because no one's going to mix up a dead body with a problematic ground that you're not allowed to anoint. So that's what it's saying there. Kol asu yamai. What does it mean when the Mishnah said kol? The Mishnah said kol tzarek kemes, everything for the dead body. So Gemara says, "Tetan rabbanu mevil kli mikar kli matechos menicha akreso kadesh lo tafuach." You're allowed to put hot or cold, or what does this mean? It's not. You're allowed to put cold vessels or metal vessels on the stomach of the dead body so that it doesn't swell up, and you can cover up all of the orifices of the dead body so that nothing goes into it, air doesn't pass through it, and it doesn't cause any swelling there. So the wind doesn't get in and damage the body. Before the silver cord is snapped asunder, zechut hashidra, you want to protect the spinal cord. V'tarot zgulas hazav ze'ama, and the golden bowl is shattered, which is referring to the making sure he doesn't urinate. I'm not sure exactly what that means. But tishavar kadal mabua ze'akares, it's referring to a pitcher is broken at the fountain, which is a reference to the stomach. V'narot ha'galgal alabor ze'peresh. That's talking about excrement. So we're covering up all the holes so that nothing gets in, nothing gets out. V'chein hu omer, that's what you would be allowed to do on Shabbos. V'chein hu omer v'zeresi perash al p'neichem v'perash ha'chageichem. Another pasuk says, Amar rav huna amar rav milar rav chaga. Interesting name given the pasuk. Elu b'nei adam sh'manichem divrei Torah v'osn kol yimei ha'chagim. This is pasuk as a reference to those people who basically neglect learning Torah and they just make their days like holidays. Amar Rabbi Levi, Amar Rabbi Papi, Amar Rabbi Yoshua, La'ach Shlosh Yom Kreso Nivkas V'Nafas Al-Panav V'Omeres Lo Tol Mash Nasat Abi. 3 days after a person dies, the stomach bursts and falls onto his face. I don't know what that means, but it says, take what you have put inside of me. I guess that means that maybe he throws up. I don't know. The dead body somehow projects something from inside and gets all over you. So maybe that's what it's talking about here, presumably based on this pasuk. Otherwise, it would not have a connection to what we just said. Zerisi perish al panechem, I will spread feces on your face. Okay. The Mishnah tells us, Ein ma'atzvines ha'meis shep Shabbos v'lo b'cholim yisiyas nefesh. You're not allowed to move the body, you're not allowed to shut the eyes of someone who's dying on Shabbos. V'lo b'chol im yisiyas nefesh, and not even during the week before the person actually dies. V'ha'ma'atzim im yisiyas nefesh, ha'reiz ha'shofech damim. Someone closes the eyes. If you close the eyes of someone who's about to die, it's as if you're killing them. Very important halachas here. It's somewhat controversial also. In terms of what you're allowed to do as a doctor and things like that. The Gemara says, you close the eyes when he's dying, so that's actually killing him. Mashal ner shikava v'holechas. It's like a dwindling flame. He puts his hand on it, so it's going to go out right away. The same thing here. The person might be dying, but you're the one that puts out the flame. Tanya Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, Omer Harotzeh Sheisatzmo Inav Shel Meis. If someone wants the eyes of the dead body to close naturally, it's kind of interesting how this exactly works, I'm not sure, but he's about to go through a process of making the eyes close, even though we're considering like you're not closing it. Nofeach lo yayin b'chotma, you sort of blow wine into his nose. V'nos in shem ben risei einav, and you put some oil between his eyes. V'ochez v'shnei gudlei raglav, and you hold his two big toes. V'hein v'sasman halayan, and then the eyelids will just close. Okay, I'm not sure why that's any better than putting your hands over the eyes and making them close. Either way, Tanya Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel Omer Tinok ben Yomo Chai Mechal Lamas Shabbos. If a child is only one day old, you're going to be Mechal Shabbos from David Melech Yisrael Meis. If the most important in the world person in the world like David Melech is dying, ain't Mechal Lamas Shabbos. You cannot be Mechal Shabbos for the sake of even the most important person. Tinok ben Yomo Chai Mechal Lamas Shabbos Amar Torah Chil Alav Shabbos Achas Kedeshish Merchal Shabbos Sarbe. Why is it that you make sure that they take care of the child? So you mechal Shabbos for one time to keep the child alive, so that child can be mechal, so that child can be mishap, can be shomer Shabbos in other times, right? There, we've seen this in the Gemara a few times. I don't know if we've seen it. We saw a similar Gemara maybe about Matan Torah. But either way, you violate it once so that you can make sure that it's kept, so that it's observed properly later. As opposed to David Melech Yisrael Meis Ein Mechal Lamas Shabbos, when if it's an important person who died, you're not going to be Mechal Shabbos for that dead body. Kevin Shemes Adam Batal Min HaMitzvos, because you're not going to be procuring any future benefits for this dead body, and therefore we're not going to violate something for the sake of the body. It's not going to be able to observe anything in the future. You can no longer accomplish any mitzvos once you pass away. So Tani, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, Tinok ben Yomachai, Ein Tzarech L'Shomer Min Achulda U'Min Achbarim. A child doesn't need any protecting from a weasel or a mouse. They run away from babies. I don't know if anyone's experienced this. I lived in New York City, but it never came up. Aval Og Me'al Chabashan Meis. But when a big giant dies, you have to protect the dead body. An animal is afraid of a person as long as he is alive, but once the end of the person is dead, the fear of the animal no longer exists. Amar Rav Papa Naktina, Nikitinan, Arye Abe Tre Lo Nafil. A lion doesn't pounce on two people. Wait a second. We've seen lions pounce on two people. So Gemara says, no. Hahuk Rabbi Kidrabi Kidrami Bar Abba. Damar Rabbi Bar Abba. Ein Chayish Letzis Ba Adam Ashenid Meloka Behema. A person is not considered to be at risk of being trampled unless he looks like an animal. What exactly does that mean? I'm not sure. I think we've seen it. Have we seen this before? No. We're going to see it again soon in Erev and Mirtz Hashem in a couple of weeks. Bli Ayin Hara. But either way, it says, if you look like an animal, so then or appears to the animal as an animal, so then the animal is going to attack you. Shnemar adam mikarv b'ayalin nimshal kim behez mozdin mo'am rabbi chanina. Asolation b'bay sechida v'chal yashm b'bay sechida achas ta lilis. A person should not sleep in a house alone. Okay, not really sure how that's avoidable, but anyone who does sleep in a house alone is seized by the evil spirit lilis. Lilith, a lot of interesting stories about Lilith. Not for now. Tanu Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, he says again, Asei ad she'at motzi u'matzi lecha v'odcha b'yadecha. A person should do as many mitzvos and do tshuva for as long as he has the means. First, financial means, for when they're found to you, when they're financial means, and when you, what does this say? Oh, sorry, I mixed it up. While you have the opportunity, while you have the financial means, and while you're under your own control. V'yav shalom amr chachamos v'zuchores v'aracha b'mei b'churas echab ad asher Lo yavo yimei hara, elu mei hazikna, v'yigiyu shanim asher tomar, ein lo yibahem chifetz, elu mei hamashiach, she'en behem lo tzchus v'lo chova. Basically saying, you should conquer your desires while you're young, and you can really do tshuva. Because once you're old and you no longer have those desires, it doesn't count as much when you do tshuva when you're old. It's no big, great, accomplishment when you overcome a desire which is very weak. And therefore, you should do it while you're young, and you get a greater scar for it. Although that's not why you should do it, but either way. And similarly, when it comes to Mashiach, you want to make sure you do all the mitzvahs before Mashiach comes, so that you can accomplish them without any sort of you know, just natural progression. If you do it while it's still difficult, you get schar again. This is the screen with Shmuel. Shmuel says that no, it's not just going to be, you know, everything. It's not just going to be a utopia in the days of Mashiach. The only difference between nowadays and in times of Mashiach, I think we've seen this in Brachos, is Shibud Machkus Bavad. It's just the fact that we're not going to be beholden to any other people, and that's going to be okay for us. But we're still going to have the inner turmoil of making sure to do things, and we get schar v'onesh and things like that. As the pasuk says, "Shnemar ki lo yechdam avyom mikarev haaretz." Poverty is not going to cease from the land, even in times of Mashiach. There's still going to be struggles. Tan Rabbi Elazar Kafar Omer la'olim v'akish adam brach. By the way, this is how the Rambam understands Mashiach. The Rambam understands Mashiach to be like the world that we have today. Right? I saw an interesting video on Tisha B'Av. Someone put together an unfortunate video of, you know, an animated sequence of events of the Beis Hamikdash being destroyed and things like that. The end of the video basically shows Yemos Mashiach, where everyone's walking back to the Beis Hamikdash. The only problem is everybody's wearing robes and everybody's walking and everybody's got a horse. Like, that's not Yemos Mashiach. We're gonna have cars. Yemos Mashiach, we're gonna have, you know, texting. We're gonna have emails. We're gonna have the lottery done by virtual, you know, Zoom conference. We don't have to have all the Kohanim travel to Yerushalayim to do all this stuff. It's gonna be like a regular time we have. We're not gonna go backwards because Mashiach came. You know, we're not gonna just become the Amish, right? We don't believe that the ideal way of the life of the world is how it was in the times of the Gemara. We believe that the things that we have today are ideal things we should be using. It's just a matter of using them for the right things. So Yemos Mashiach, the only difference is going to be Shibud Malchus. The only difference is going to be who's going to have jurisdiction or control over us. We're going to have our own sovereignty, but everything else is going to be the same. So expect your like daily newscast about what's going on in the Beis HaMikdash at your breakfast table and your newspapers. At least that's what I like to imagine. Tan Rabbi Elazar Kafar Omer. A person should always ask for mercy when it comes to poverty. If it doesn't come to him, it's going to come to his child. Somebody in your lineage is going to be poor. This thing is a cycle. That some people become poor, some people become rich. You know, there's a lot of, you know, financial mobility. I'm sure Svi can talk to us about all the economic books that he reads in terms of the cycle of poverty and the cycle of wealth and things like that, especially in America, the way that things have sort of turned over and they keep turning over. But either way, so it's a cycle. If you don't become poor, somebody in your lineage is going to become poor. Amar of Yosef Naktina Nikitinan Hai Turba Mirabana Lomiyani. If you're a scholar, you're not going to become poor. Wait a second. There are plenty of Talmid Chacham that are poor. If they're going to be poor, so then they're not going to be poor to the extent that they have to go around asking for money at people's doors. I don't know if this is how he paskin, but it doesn't seem to me like that's true either. But either way, Rabbi Chiya says to his wife, Ki asi anya akdimi lirifta ki hech dilakadmi lovnayach. If you see a poor person come to the house, so make sure you give him bread because he gives our children bread. So you're giving a curse to our children. They're going to be poor, and they're going to have to ask for this from this person's children to get bread. So poverty is a cycle that goes throughout the world, and at one point or another, your lineage is going to have this issue. Tan Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Omer, Menasim L'chor Rachma, Rachma Rechav, Rachma Rachma Abrios, Rachma Lev HaMashmaim. Anyone who has mercy on other people, then Hashem is going to have mercy on you. V'choshi Em Rachma Abrios, Em Rachma Lev HaMashmaim. Hashem is not going to have mercy on you. Ad Hashem Lo Tech Shach Hashem Shva Orz V'Petachas Achotem. The Gemara goes back to Pesukim from Koheles. Before the sun and the light of the moon and stars are darkened, it's referring to the forehead and the nose, which stick out, I guess more for some people than others. And the moon, that's the soul, that's referring to the cheeks, that your eyesight follows the amount that you cry. Anytime you cry before you're 40 years old, the eyesight's going to come back. I don't know if this is in line with medical knowledge. I wouldn't believe so, but maybe it is in some way or another. That if you cry after you're 40 years old, so you're permanently damaging your eyes. this kind of eye shadow that they used to use actually helps your eyes until you're 40 years old. Even if you put, after you're 40 years old, even if you put as thick of a weaver's pin on the top of your eyes are not going to get better. They'll just be maintained. Okay? My kamashma, why are you telling us that's kam da'al mekuchla tvei mali to teach you? You should put more eyeshadow on. That's what it says. Okay, unclear why and what that means. Rabbi Chanina shechila leibarte. Rabbi Chanina unfortunately lost a child, lost a daughter, lohava kabachi, and he didn't cry over her. So amar lei devisu tarnegolta afik mibeisach. You what? Did you lose a chicken? Why aren't you so sad? Why aren't you sad? Your child died. So amar lei tarati two things. Tachala vivara. One is the loss of a child, and then the loss, and then there's loss of blindness. Why would I lose both? If I don't cry, I'll save my eyesight, which is just crazy to think. There are six types of tears. Three are good, and three are bad. The types of tears that come from smoke are bad, and the types that come from crying are bad. The types that come from really exerting yourself in the bathroom, those are bad tears. I guess they hurt your eyes. The tears that come from medicines, like drugs, and from laughing, and from good food. I don't exactly, or from sharp food, that's what it means. So those are good types of tears. So if you're ever crying at the Pesach Seder, so don't feel too bad about it. That's still itself a sense of freedom. It's good for your eyes. Okay, Shkayach, we'll pick up tomorrow. A lot of good stuff today.
Thank you.
Yeah.